Welcome to A Time for Change. I'm Sybille Marcellus, here with Alexis Christophorus and Marquise Francis. It is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Awareness Month. And so today we focus our attention on the millions of Americans with ADHD. It can be a tricky condition to recognize or diagnose. And for adults, it can make work and home incredibly difficult to manage. Let's take a quick look.
ADHD is a condition that most people associate with kids, but an estimated 11 million adults in this country have it too. It's a neurological disorder that affects thinking, mood, and behavior. To be diagnosed, people must show a persistent pattern of inattention and/or a pattern of hyperactivity or impulsivity. It can be managed with medication, therapy, and skills training, but at its most extreme and without help, ADHD can make life chaotic and turn the regular responsibilities of adulthood into crushing burdens.
Our next guest not only has ADHD, she's actually turned it into a booming career educating people about the condition on her YouTube channel, How to ADHD. I had a chance to speak with Jessica McCabe about her own journey and how she's trying to help others.
I have had ADHD and known I've had ADHD since I was a kid. I was diagnosed when I was 12, but I didn't really understand it. So I kept struggling with a lot of things. And I knew that I had trouble focusing and I knew my medication helped with that, but I was still having a lot of trouble with life in other areas. And I kept failing and I kept failing and I kept putting so much effort into everything and feeling like I was falling farther and farther behind my peers. And I kept hearing this potential word following me around. You have so much potential. You have so much potential. Why aren't you reaching your potential? Why aren't you just doing this? Why can't you just do this? You should be able to do this. And I was so frustrated at some point that I just stopped doing everything I was trying to do. And I decided, you know what? At 31 years old, I was broke, divorced, living at home with my mom. My career was going nowhere. And I went, you know what? Let me figure this out. I know I have ADHD. Maybe there's more to it than that. And so I went about learning about my ADHD and learning strategies that might be able to help me. And everything that I learned, I put somewhere where I knew I could find it again, which at the time was YouTube. I was that disorganized. That was the one thing I knew that I could find again. So I put my story on YouTube.
So now you've turned your ADHD into a career on YouTube with Patreon. Not a lot of people can do that. What advice do you have for other people in your situation, those who've been diagnosed with ADHD or another neurodiverse condition? Should they make their diagnosis public, especially to a potential employer?
Whether or not somebody decides to make their diagnosis public is a really personal decision, I think, and it depends on a lot of factors. I do think that talking about our challenges is really important and not trying to hide the fact that we're struggling, but there are times where the people around you, maybe you're in a job where it's not safe. There are still employers that it's not safe to talk about your ADHD at work because you're going to get passed over for promotions. People are going to make assumptions about your capabilities. There's still a lot of stigma around it. And so sometimes it doesn't make sense. But I think personally, if you're in a position where you can talk about your ADHD, it's a good idea to talk about your ADHD. If you're in a position where you're secure at work, it's a really good thing, because the problem is, if people only bring up their ADHD when they're about to get fired because they're not performing well and they haven't gotten the supports they need, that creates a lot more stigma and it creates more shame around it, because maybe nobody speaks up about their ADHD at work. And so everybody's pretending, everybody's trying to be neurotypical, trying to be normal at work, and nobody's really getting their needs met. And if you're in a position where you're safe and you're stable and you know that your job is secure and your boss is happy with you, talking about your ADHD helps that boss understand ADHD so that other employees can also speak up about theirs. It makes it safer for everybody.
Good point. How important is it for folks with ADHD to choose the right career? I mean, I think it's important for everyone, but what is sort of the unique challenges they face when they're thinking about their path forward and career choice?
I think it's really critical that people with ADHD choose a career that works for them, that works for their brain. The difference between being a complete failure and getting fired from a volunteer position at a yoga studio for me and being the CEO of a company and a successful YouTuber has just been choosing the right career. the things that my brain naturally does, the things I'm naturally good at, my creativity and my passion and my curiosity. The same thing that I get paid for now is what I got fired for back at that yoga studio. Uh-huh. I got fired from that position because I was on the internet all the time because I was curious. In between folding laundry and doing those things, I was just like, well, there's nothing to do. I'll go on the internet and like look up answers to things I'm curious about. I get paid for that now. I got fired for it then. That's the level of difference it makes.
Yeah. Find how you can play to your strengths for sure. I want to talk a little bit about your success with social media. Your TED Talk, I know, has more than 3 million views. That's gone viral. You have almost 1 million subscribers on YouTube. Tens of millions of people have seen your videos. You've sort of become this go-to source or the face of ADHD for so many people. Does that ever become overwhelming for you?
It's a huge responsibility. I started this channel to help me and maybe a few other people that already knew they had ADHD and maybe also needed some strategies. I had no idea the impact it would have. I had no idea how many people would watch my channel and realize that maybe there was a reason they'd been struggling their entire life and nobody ever caught it. And there's so much misinformation about ADHD out there that I feel an incredible amount of responsibility and an honor. It's a privilege to be able to do this, but it is so important to me to make sure that I'm putting out good information because I know how many people are relying on it now. I'm terrified and I'm so grateful that I got to do this.
Jessica, how have you seen the conversation around ADHD change or shift over the past decade or so? I mean, you were talking earlier about there is still some stigma, but so many more people are now seeing it as a superpower, some people are calling it. How has that dynamic changed over the past decade?
I think as we're understanding ADHD better, we are evolving our understanding to the complexities of it. I think for a long time, we thought that it was kids getting distracted, not having the ability to focus. And then, yeah, maybe they take meds and then that helps them focus. But now we understand that it's not a thing that can be fixed in a brain. It's not like, oh, that brain's deficient in some way. Like, let's correct that real quick. It's our brains are almost on an entirely different operating system. They just function differently. And so there's some advantages to that and there's some disadvantages to that. Some of the disadvantages are, you know, organizational challenges and difficulty focusing and being really interested in something for like 5 seconds and then being completely disinterested in it. There are a lot of challenges that come with it, but on the flip side, creativity actually comes from distraction. So a lot of people who are really, really creative are the people who aren't going to think linearly and stay on task. They're the ones who have brains that have shower thoughts in the middle of the day. That's distracting, but it enhances our creativity. It enhances outside the box thinking and creative problem solving. It enhances, you know, that passion, that drive for one thing and then losing interest and going to something else means a lot of times we flip from job to job. And what we do is we almost like bees, like we pollinate, we take what's great mm-hmm. about one job and we bring it to another job. We take something we learned from one career and bring it to another thing. And there's just something really, really beautiful about that. I personally don't say that my ADHD is a superpower, but I recognize that it does give me talents that are not common. It gives me strengths as well as challenges.
How would you speak directly to employers and to corporate America? I mean, we see sort of falling under the umbrella of diversity and inclusion and equity, the idea of supporting those with neurodiverse conditions. But what would you tell them with regards to employing people with ADHD?
I think that employers are starting to recognize the value of neurodiversity in the workplace. And a lot of companies are actually creating programs designed to attract neurodiverse talent, because in today's workplace, those who are early tech adopters are really, you know, really great employees to have. Those who have a lot of creativity and new ideas and drive and passion. And honestly, we work really hard. There's a lot of really strong advantages to having ADHD employees. And a huge one is that we don't get phased in a crisis. A lot of us, I mean, COVID happened and we're like, yeah, that tracks. Like, usually it's me doing this to myself, but now the world's doing it anyway, like moving on. I feel like we're able to thrive a lot of the time in crisis. And there's so many valuable things to that. But the biggest thing I would want employers to understand is if you measure those employees, if you want that out of the box thinker, if you want that drive, that passion, that, you know, all these novel ideas, but then you're also going to expect them to, you know, get there at exactly on time and stay on task and like not get distracted during meetings. Like you can't have both, right? You take the good with the bad and recognize that they're two sides of the same coin. And there are things that you can do as an employer to accommodate the ADHD and to make it so that it flips onto the good side more often than not, right? A lot of people with ADHD also have dyslexia. If you have somebody with dyslexia and you have them reviewing, you know, paperwork for typos, that's not a great use of their talents. But if you put them in a situation where a lot of times they're more visual thinkers, where you're putting them in charge of visuals, like now you're using them in a way that is going to be really good for them because they'll be happy. They'll be doing something they're good at and good for you as an organization.
You know, more broadly, ADHD or not, I know you've done some videos talking about remote work and how challenging this time has been. Many of us feeling isolated, burnt out, feeling like we never truly leave the office because our home has now become the office. What's your advice? What can you share with people who are going through that right now as they continue to work remotely?
Work-life separation is really it. We talk about work-life balance, but it's really work-life separation. And cues are huge. Whether you're an employer or an employee, you have to understand that cues, our environment really affects how we work. And so when you're done working for the day, putting away the stuff that you use and making your space look visually different, whether that's like even a different mouse pad, if you have the same computer, there are a lot of things that you can do in terms of that. But also transition time is a huge one. We need transition time. And we got that naturally when we were going to the office, the drive to work, the drive home from work, walking to a meeting, walking out of a meeting. And so one of the things that I'm seeing a lot of people do, and I'm trying to do in my organization as well, is instead of hour-long meetings, recognize there's going to be another meeting immediately after that. And so make it a 50-minute meeting. And that gives people 10 minutes to transition to the next meeting. Because otherwise, what happens is they go right up to that hour, then they go into the next meeting. And the first 10 minutes of that meeting, they're not present yet. They're still cycling through or catching the fallout from the first meeting. And then they're spending the last 50 minutes of that meeting trying to catch up on what they missed. So it's better for everybody if you build in that transition time.
Jessica, before we let you go, I know you have some exciting stuff coming up. You actually just inked a book deal. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I've been wanting to write a book since I was, I think, 12 years old. I thought I'd be published by 15. I'm a little late on that, but you know, I'm getting it done. Random House reached out and offered me a book deal. So I'm going to be writing How to ADHD, the book. That's going to be my story. A lot of stuff that I shared in the TED Talk. And I'm trying to give people the sense, I'm trying to give people the experience that they would have had if they had watched my channel, seen my TED Talk, gotten to hang out with me in person. And the experience that I got from going from really feeling completely disempowered and not understanding how my brain works and not having any tools and just beating myself up all the time to like completely having a full understanding of how my brain works, when it works, why it doesn't sometimes, what to do about it, what my toolbox looks like, and what challenges I'm not going to overcome realistically.
Those are some great insights there from Jessica McCabe, founder and host of How to ADHD on YouTube. Still ahead, one of the best career paths for people with ADHD. We're back with more of A Time for Change right after this.
Welcome back to A Time for Change. In recognition of ADHD Awareness Month all October long, we're shining a light on a condition 11 million Americans deal with on a daily basis. It's one that's often misunderstood and frankly undervalued. But as our next guest is discovering in his own research, ADHD can be an enormous asset, especially to entrepreneurs. I spoke with Johan Wicklund, professor at the Whitman Business School at Syracuse University, about the strong link between ADHD and entrepreneurship. Take a listen.
Quite often we only think about ADHD as having all these potentially negative consequences for people in the labor market. The great thing about entrepreneurship is that you can shape it to be whatever you want it to be, right? And people with ADHD, they kind of have a hard time to fit in the regular market, job market. So they are just spontaneously, intuitively attracted to entrepreneurship. So we asked, among students, we have asked among other kinds of adult people as well. And people with ADHD, they often say that they are attracted to going into entrepreneurship. But we also see that they act on this. So we can see that people with ADHD are more likely to actually go into entrepreneurship. And then they can use some of their characteristics to their advantage in that profession.
And speaking of those characteristics, research would tell you that folks with ADHD are underemployed because they lack different emotions, processing speeds, or even lacking organization. And those are a slew of the possible negative characteristics. But there's also a lot of positive characteristics, particularly if you go into entrepreneurship. So what are those characteristics people are possibly missing out on?
Yes. So that's a good one. So, so people with ADHD are typically impatient and they prefer acting rather than deliberating. And they have, this high activation level. And that's really a good thing in entrepreneurship because, you have to deal with new situations. You have to think on your feet. You have to do things that are risky. When you start your own and run your own business, you never quite know how it's going to turn out. And people who have these characteristics, they can do really, really well because they're focused on acting rather than sitting back and deliberating. And entrepreneurship is all about acting and doing new things. And that's something that suits these people really well.
I know you were diagnosed yourself with adult ADHD in 2012. So I'm curious, how has it both benefited you or been a challenge in your professional career?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I find it very interesting is that I make decisions really, really fast. I make them on the fly, and I never understand why people have to think so long about stuff. So that's one thing. And I think it's mainly been to my advantage. And I also think that, because that's the way I've been wired, I think I'm really good at absorbing information really quickly and use my intuition. So I think a lot of people might be better if you need to, let's say, make a smart investment, you need to analyze different scenarios. That's not really my strongest suit, but I do believe that using my intuition, making fast decisions in important situations, that's where I really benefited from it. And then I also think that just, being a spontaneous person, I think that people that have ADHD can be pretty much fun to hang with because they come up with new ideas and do stuff that might be a little bit out of the ordinary.
One of the things I'm picking up on is when it comes to ADHD, I think a lot of jobs or opportunities are kind of cookie cutter. They're a set way. And the reality is if you are able to make sure that ADHD, when you have someone who has ADHD, you're able to mold whatever that position is around them, it can be more beneficial than just trying to throw them into whatever you already have laid out. And so how can people be better? Companies, corporations, and just spaces, maybe even a university, be better equipped and adapt to folks with ADHD?
Yeah, I think that's a really important issue. And I think that there's not now a lot of companies that say they're devoted to diversity. I think that let's see if they actually walk the walk, because if you really are devoted to diversity, you must understand that there will be much more people with different viewpoints, different way of thinking, different ways of approaching things. And there will likely be more conflict as well, right? And I think is that we have to accept that level of maybe discomfort sometimes, that not everybody's going to look and act like the boss does. They're going to have different opinions. They're going to have different viewpoints. So I think we just have to be accepting of that. I also think that, specifically to ADHD, people with ADHD are more vulnerable to stress, for example. So I think it's important to be open and aware of the downside of having a high pressure job, that you might make resources available for, let's say, meditation, yoga, stuff like that. So a little bit more focus on, people being able to engage in self-care during and around work.
Yeah. And I hope that if the past 18 months haven't shown anyone anything, we're able to adapt, because I think that's what life is going to be like moving forward, just being able to adapt and roll with the punches. And so I know you're doing a lot of innovative things up at the school. So how would you correlate, make sure that ADHD students have everything they need? Would you do anything special?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So for the past year, I've been doing a research project where we're looking at students who have ADHD and what kind of education and style and you know, classroom activities that fit them. We have interviewed psychiatrists, psychologists, entrepreneurs, students with ADHD. And right now I'm designing a course that's specifically adapted to students with ADHD. Because like I said, we know that these people are attracted to entrepreneurship. So I think it's really important. And also we know that they often struggle in school because school is so poorly adapted to how a person with ADHD learns. So I'm figuring if these people are going to go into entrepreneurship, it's way better if they have a good education. But that education has to be targeted to the way they learn. So essentially, I'm designing this entrepreneurship class now that will be available to any student at our university. And it's very much focused on, you know, not having textbooks, not having readings, you know, not having quizzes and exams and paper writing, all those things that people with ADHD typically hate. But it's more much more focused on that they actually do things and then they present what it is they've done, recording videos and stuff, and they reflect upon what went right, what went wrong, what am I going to do different the next time. So that's largely, you know, how this has been designed. And I'm really excited about this because, you know, doing research is one thing, but it's really nice if you can take your research and actually do something for people.
Professor Wicklund from the Syracuse University, my alma mater, big shout out to the Orange, had to sneak that in there. Stay with us. There's still more ahead after this break.
As a child, I found school difficult. I had ADHD, which probably contributed to my restlessness. I'll never forget being told by one of my teachers that I'd never amount to anything. It was swimming that enabled me to see past those challenges and not be defined by them.
Really certainly proved that teacher wrong. That was U.S. Olympic legend Michael Phelps, who has been very open about having ADHD. In fact, he says that swimming actually helped slow down his racing mind and helped him feel in control for the first time in his life. I want to look ahead to next week because we'll want you to join us for an interview with Brandeis University professor Anita Hill. It is 30 years ago this week, hard to believe, since she appeared at the Supreme Court confirmation hearings of Clarence Thomas, testifying that Thomas had sexually harassed her when they worked together. Hill has a new book out. It's called Believing, Our 30-Year Journey to End Gender Violence. And that promises to be a fascinating conversation, so we hope that you can join us then. That's going to do it for this week's A Time for Change. On behalf of Sybil Marcellus and Marquise Francis, I'm Alexis Christophorus. Thanks so much for watching. But do stay tuned. More Yahoo Finance Live to come right after this.